Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So who's going to win, the bullies or the nerds? No, seriously, this is what I think so much of Trump's campaign, his candidacy back in 2016, the behavior of his agencies, particularly his police agencies, those associated with the Department of Justice and ICE here in Portland and other cities around America, it all comes down to behaving like a bully. And this is one of the most difficult things, I think, for most human beings throughout their lives, is how do you respond to a bully? How do you respond to a bully when you're a kid and the bully has the power to overwhelm you? How do you respond to a bully in the workplace, particularly when the bully is your boss? How do you respond to a bully, to a political bully? This is just breathtaking. And the bullies are basically saying, you know, it's our way or the highway. Don't listen to those damn scientists. We're going to open the schools. We're going to do whatever we want. We're going to, you know, et cetera. For example, in Idaho, this is the Idaho legislature is controlled by Republicans, both the House and Senate. Republican Stephen Thane of Emmett, Idaho. This was reported on Boise State Public Radio, by the way. Says basically that public health officials, scientists are elitists. Because, you know, they've got college degrees and they study science. And we shouldn't listen to elitists. Here's literally exactly what he said. These are his words. Quote, this is Stephen Thane, a member of the Idaho State Senate, Republican. Quote, we're letting a few fearful people control the lives of those who are not fearful. Listening to experts to set policy is an elitist approach. And I'm very fearful of an elitist approach. I'm also fearful that it leads to totalitarianism, especially when you say, well, we're doing it for the public good. Think about how that turns reality inside out, turns it on its head. It literally is flipping the obligations of government upside down. The role of government, as clearly laid out in the preamble to the Constitution, if no place else, is to defend and support and promote the public good, the public welfare. It's the whole point. It's why we have government. This is the preamble. It's all one sentence. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, to establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. We want the public good to be defended. That's why we elect people. That's why we have a government. And here we have, let me just read this one more time. This is how Republicans are thinking all around the country. This just happens to be Stephen Thain, a Republican from Emmett, the state senator in Idaho. He says, we're letting a few fearful people control the lives of those of us who are not fearful. Listening to experts to set policy is an elitist approach. And I'm very fearful of an elitist approach. I'm also fearful that it leads to totalitarianism, especially when you say, well, we're doing it for the public good. So for the public good, what are we supposed to do? Nothing? I know that that's, you know, how the Koch brothers traditionally thought. That's what David Koch ran on in 1980 when he ran for president or vice president of the United States on the Libertarian ticket. Privatize Medicare, privatize Social Security, end Medicaid, end all public schooling in the United States, end all regulation of polluting companies in the United States, end all taxation of billionaires in the United States. Those were literally his campaign positions. You want to see the whole thing? Just Google David Koch and Bernie Sanders. Bernie's got the whole thing on his website, has had it there for years. Easy to find. So is that what you want? The federal government does not protect the people? Or do you want what Donald Trump is trying to create, a federal government that is actively endangering the people? Just letting a 5 million Americans now infected. And people say, oh, well, you know, I'm a young guy. I don't have to worry about that. Well, here we've got a guy, Spencer Rolison, of Canaveral Groves, Florida. He's not black, he's not Hispanic, and he's not obese. He doesn't have pre-existing conditions. He's a healthy 21-year-old white guy. And he tested positive for the coronavirus in May. The story's over by Travis Geddes over at Raw Story. The 21-year-old Florida man experiences organ failure after recovering from mild COVID case. He says, I had a little bit of a cough, a slight fever of 99.4, I think, for the first couple of days. And then after that, I lost smell for about 2.5 weeks. And that was my only symptom for the entire 2 weeks. On May 21st, I got a negative test result finally. So he goes back to work. He says, I feel fine. I tested negative. I work outside. I was wearing a jacket. It was 96 degrees outside. He was working in Florida. And I was still cold. I was sick again. On June 11th is when I started feeling it all again. My fever ended up going to 103.4 for like 2 days. He passed out during a doctor's appointment. They took him to the hospital, and his heart and multiple other organs had failed. He says, something from coronavirus weakened my immune system, which caused me to have all these other symptoms and end up with sepsis and all that. He said, I wasn't on a ventilator. I think it's called BiPAP. It's a mask that they put on your face and it gets strapped on and it basically does the breathing for you. He said, I shouldn't get my heart rate up right now because it can lead to a heart attack, to cardiac arrest. He said, I thought coronavirus wasn't that big a deal. That's the reason I posted on Facebook to my friends and family. Take this seriously. I'm 21 years old. I have a great health record, no issues, and it almost took my life. There's no reason to take this lightly. I can't urge people enough to take it seriously. Meanwhile, over at the Palm Beach Post, the headline, an article by Andrew Mara, reads, health directors told to keep quiet as Florida leaders press to reopen classrooms. Now, typically, you would think during a pandemic, the decision to open public schools would not be up to the public schools. It would be up to the public health officials, right? I mean, that's that whole idea of promoting the general welfare that I just read you out of the preamble to the Constitution. Well, here it is. This is the article from the Palm Beach Post. Following a directive from the Ron DeSantis, the Republican governor of Florida, from DeSantis' administration, county health directors across Florida refused to give school boards advice on whether to reopen schools in a worsening pandemic. This is according to a Gannett USA Today network review. For frustrated school board members, it was a puzzling turnabout, writes Andrew Mara. Florida's public schools have long depended on local health, public health directors for recommendations on everything from reducing encephalitis risks at football games to how to test students during tuberculosis outbreaks. But the director's new reticence aligned perfectly with DeSantis' stated goal of pressuring Florida public schools to offer in-person classes. And lacking clear guidance from local health directors, school board members in many counties said they felt compelled to reopen classrooms despite serious misgivings. In fact, keeping campuses closed, again, this is from this article in the Palm Beach Post today, keeping campuses closed, they said, risked violating an edict last month from State Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran, DeSantis and Trump toady, which decreed public schools must open, quote, brick and mortar schools at least 5 days per week, end quote. School board member in Lake County, Mark Dodd, he says, when we voted to reopen schools, I'll be honest and tell you, it was because we were under an executive order to do so. Do I think they're safe? Absolutely not. Are the bullies going to win? Or is the coronavirus going to kick their ass? I mean, so far you got 170,000 dead Americans. It doesn't seem to have touched Trump.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
At least with the Republican Party, which still more than 90% supports him, where does this go? Hi, Tom Hartman here. Hey, my new book is out, The Hidden History of Monopolies, How Big Business Destroyed the American Dream. We're having a coronavirus-safe book tour. I'll be at Powell's virtual bookstore event in conversation with David Corton, Tuesday, August 25th at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. And on Friday, September 4th at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, I'll be at a Town Hall Seattle virtual event. And you can get your tickets for that live stream event at townhallseattle.org. There are also links at tomhartman.com. I'll be taking you from the birth of America through FDR to the Reagan Revolution and today. In the foreword of my book, Ralph Nader says, this is the most important dynamic book on the cancers of monopoly by giant corporations written in our generation, end quote. So be sure to go to tomhartman.com and sign up for one of these two great virtual book signings, Powell's in Portland and Town Hall Seattle. Don't miss it and sign up now. Tag your it. Michael in Seattle watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Michael, what's up? What's on your mind?
Well, blessings to you, Tom. I was just saying to my wife that the plot against the post office and the Republicans' endgame is clear. So I think it might be time to focus on getting millions of folks to the polls or ballot drop boxes in critical states. And a way to do that would be enrolling the young Black Lives Matter, March for Our Lives, climate activists, just to name a few young people involved in accompanying and being present and observing and protecting the vote by the millions if necessary. And I believe that those young groups could be enrolled to do that. I think that it's time to stop focusing on what we know is going to happen with the post office. I love your thoughts.
I think to a large extent you're right, Michael. And were I in the leadership of the Sunrise Movement or one of the local Black Lives Matter groups, I would be arguing in favor of shifting to a focus. And by the way, you look at the civil rights movement back in the 1950s and 1960s, and you see this constant, you know, movement back and forth and back and forth, although they were doing both at the same time. But between public demonstration on the one hand and, you know, a more low profile, quiet grassroots organizing people to get them registered to vote. So I would put voter registration at the top of the list for any of those groups. I think that's a good and important suggestion. Michael, thank you for that. Mike, from Michael to Mike in Anderson, Wash Island. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm over here on Anderson Island. The only way on and off the island is by ferry. And so we have a park and ride that people that walk on and off the ferry, they can, you know, park their car and so forth. In the park and ride parking lot, it's a drop box. Okay, it's one of many drop boxes throughout Pierce County.
Ballot drop box?
Yeah, ballot drop box. It looks like a big post office, you know, mailbox,
yeah, like
but without
mailbox,
a drop down
yeah.
lid. It's got an open slot. Now, one of my fears, concerns, was that for tampering and vandalism, you know, maybe somebody dropping paint down inside or dropping flammable material or something like that. So I called my election committee or election board and asked them what kind of security they have. They have a built-in fire extinguisher, for one, and they collect the ballots every other day. during boating season. So they have pretty good security.
They should have cameras like ATMs do. They're cheap these days.
Actually, they do have a camera for the whole parking lot, but not specifically for that ballot box. But they have ballot boxes everywhere. I hear the music. But, you know, that's one way to circumvent this post office purge or whatever you want to call it.
The problem is that... Yeah, put it in the Dropbox. Yeah, I'm totally with you, Mike. My concern is that other states, particularly red states, will not even be putting out Dropboxes. But we'll see. Mike, thanks for the call. The only two presidents who were ever impeached, thus credibly accused of crimes that rose to the level of impeachment, and then those crimes were indicted in the House of Representatives with an impeachment vote and tried in the United States Senate. The only two presidents that had that happen, by coincidence, and I'm sure it's just a coincidence, are the only two presidents whose Department of Justice's Office of Legal Counsel wrote a memo saying, you can't arrest a sitting president. What he's doing is too important. He's too busy. You can check it out over at TomHartmann.com. Tag, you're it. There's a new website out there. It's called Vote From Home 2020. I'm looking at it right now. And how it works, COVID-19 has brought America to a halt. And with it, almost all in-person voter mobilization efforts. Well, they're doing all kinds of cool stuff. In fact, let's check in with one of the people involved with this effort. Ben Tyson is the co-founder of VoteFromHome2020.org. Ben, welcome to the program. Tell us about Vote From Home 2020.
Well, thanks, Tom. It's great to be here with you today. I really appreciate it. Yeah, Vote From Home 2020 is kind of our grassroots response to both the dual factors of the pandemic this year and Donald Trump's ongoing efforts at voter suppression, trying to disenfranchise voters to keep himself in power, and our realization that, you know, we can mobilize activists and grassroots support across the country in order to keep him from doing that, from keep him from using COVID-19 as the biggest tool of voter suppression that we've ever seen in our lifetimes.
So how?
So we are reaching out to voters in swing states. Particularly, we are targeting voters in North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. These are three states that are battleground states, obviously, in the election. And if we flip these three states to vote Democratic in 2020, even if everything else stays the same, we'll manage to get 270 electoral votes and win. But these are three states that have historically very low rates of voting by mail. We see voting by mail as the key in order to make sure we have a safe election this year so people can vote safely from home over a long period of time. You know, we're getting out there early. We've already started sending text messages and making calls to voters in these three states to get them activated, get them signed up to vote by mail. And then we'll be sending them mail-in ballots directly with return postage prepaid, with the return envelope pre-addressed, so that they can get their mail-in ballot early and get it returned early so that their vote will be counted in the election.
So if people want to vote from home, at least in those three states, they can go to votefromhome2020.org. What about the other states?
Well, actually, anyone in any state can go to votefromhome2020.org/apply and, you know, click on their state and get access to find tools on how to register to vote by mail in those states. Our voter mobilization efforts and direct voter contact are just the ones that are focused on those three states. But anyone can go to votefromhome2020.org/apply to get information and help registering for a mail-in ballot wherever they live. Obviously, in some states, it's easier than in others. North Carolina, Michigan, and Pennsylvania are also three states we're targeting because they allow any voter in the state without needing an excuse to request a mail-in ballot, even though this is the first year for many of them in doing so on a widespread way.
What about people who live in Texas or New York, where you have to have a reason to get a mail-in ballot? And in Texas, in fact, I think you have to have a doctor write that reason.
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of ongoing court cases specifically challenging Texas's restrictions on voter registration for vote by mail. And in New York, I know there's still some ongoing discussion about expanding that for the general election. But in a lot of these states, I mean, it is true that something that is a hindrance to voters is not being able to request a mail-in ballot easier. New Hampshire is another state where you still require an excuse in order to request a mail-in ballot. And while there are legal challenges going on to those to try and get them overturned or lifted for the 2020 2020 election. This is a broader fight than just actually that we're seeing in 2020, and the efforts to expand voting access is something that both predates the 2020 election and something that we're hoping to continue once this is wrapped up and we have a Democratic president in the White House.
You know, it boggles my mind, Ben, is that, you know, very few people dispute. I mean, you got crackpots around the fringes with their little lawsuits and things. But basically, there's very few people disputing the powers of federal and state governments during a public health emergency. For example, the power to close restaurants and bars, or the power to require, you know, to limit public gatherings, things like that. No rational person is saying, oh, no, you can't do that. But even in a state that's theoretically controlled by Democrats, like New York State, they're not saying, because of the public health emergency, we're going to make it easy for people to vote by mail. What's going on in New York? What am I missing here? And why is this state of emergency not being more broadly used by other states? Or is this something that's exclusive outside of New York to states controlled by Republicans who agree with Donald Trump? And apparently with you, Ben Tyson, that if everybody votes, more Democrats get elected and the Republicans suffer.
Well, we also have to remember that, you know, Donald Trump's whole fundamental premise to his existence and his electoral strategy and success is premised on this idea of restricting the number of people who can vote. That's also a big factor in why he won in 2016. And he believes that and knows that if everyone came out and voted in the general election, that he would lose. I mean, this is also why we have to remember that Hillary Clinton did win the popular vote in 2016. And the majority of this country voted for someone not named Donald Trump that year. That said, I mean,
same with Al Gore and Bush.
Exactly. So this is an ongoing problem, kind of systemic to our country, that we make it harder for people to vote and participate in our democracy just because it's actually a political tactic for one side of the aisle to help them stay in power. But going back to the issue of like expanding vote by mail access in red or blue states, I mean, this is something that we have to remember is an entrenched voting system, right? That people just aren't used to voting by mail, whether you live in Texas or New York, in a lot of these places. You know, in places like Oregon and Colorado, there's a long history of voting by mail. People are used to it, and it's very accepted. But, you know, it takes a long time to transition and get people used to new voting systems. That's why with Vote From Home 2020, we're really focused on this component of it that's voter outreach and calling voters and texting them at multiple points along the process of voting to help walk them through it. Because, you know, whether you're an election official trying to administer and institute a new way of voting or a voter, you know, trying to, you know, figure out what the new ways of voting are, it can be complicated. And so that's why we really need to focus on the voter mobilization aspects of expanding this as well.
We're talking with Ben Tyson. He's the co-founder of VoteFromHome2020.org. Ben, some months ago, Greg Palast had pointed out that about a third of ballots that are sent out here in Oregon don't ever get returned. Yeah, that's because about a third of people who, you know, are eligible to vote don't vote. In some states, it's as much as half. Over the weekend, he was tweeting that over 20% of Michigan people who had gotten absentee ballots, those ballots were not recorded. I don't know if he was talking about people just didn't vote and send them back, or if they were disqualified. But, you know, we are seeing in some states some fairly high numbers, percentage numbers, for ballots being disqualified because, you know, people didn't sign the outside of the envelope, or because somebody challenged it, saying that their signature wasn't close enough to the one on their card, on their voter registration card. You know, what's the situation with all this stuff?
Well, I think that there are some institutional changes that we can and need to fight for over the coming months. One of the biggest ones is fighting to extend the deadline where ballots can be accepted back at county clerks or local township officials, or, you know, it varies state by state, but wherever ballots are sent back to by voters, by changing the deadline so where it has to be postmarked by Election Day, not received by Election Day, you can actually cut down on those numbers of rejected ballots significantly.
Here in Oregon, though, Ben, our vote-by-mail ballots, they come in a self-addressed stamped envelope. It's got postage already on it, and it doesn't get postmarked.
Well, and that's also one of the important things that you particularly have in Oregon there. That's a wild success that we can fight for over the coming months is expanded drop boxes. You know, actually, in Oregon, most people don't send their ballots back via mail. They put them in one of the drop boxes. I went to college up there, and I got to do that myself for a number of years.
I live here.
There you go. Well, so anyways, expanding drop boxes, changing the postmark deadline, and other simple local institutional changes like that are realistic steps that we can take in order to safeguard the elections and make voting by mail more accessible in the general election.
There you go. Ben Tyson, the co-founder of VoteFromHome2020.org. Check out that website. A great resource. Ben, thanks so much for dropping by.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
This
great talking with you.
We'll
be right back.
Tom Hartman Program.
VoteFromHome2020.org. VoteFromHome2020.org. We'll be right back.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Hey, did you know that Hillary Clinton actually won Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, North Carolina, and Florida in the 2016 election? It's on page 92 of my new book, The Hidden History of the War on Voting.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Boy, he just came right out and said it. Donald Trump, during his so-called coronavirus briefing, his little mini rally at the White House every day, he just came right out and said it. He is messing with the post office to prevent people from voting. You know, the statistics are all over the place. I spent some time online looking for this morning because I saw a statistic quoted last night on CNN, which was that over 80% of Democratic voters intend to or would prefer to vote by mail, and that is only true of between 20 and 30% of Republican voters. And of course, the big variable is this Trump virus, you know, and that the Trump virus has killed 160,000 plus Americans, and the Trump virus has infected over 5 million of us, and it is spreading and it is growing, and people just don't want to show up at the polling place unless they watch Fox News and they believe that the Trump virus is actually the China virus and it isn't all that bad, and mostly it just kills black people and old people. So Donald Trump came right out and said, yeah, you want money to help out people who are unemployed? Cool. Take the post office out of it. Here's exactly what he said. These are his words, Donald Trump. They want $3.5 billion for universal mail-in ballots. They want $25 billion for the post office. They need that money so they can have the post office work so that they can take millions of ballots. If they don't get that money, you can't do universal mail-in voting, something that will turn out to be fraudulent. In other words, if everybody can vote by mail, Democrats win right across the board, and Donald Trump and the Republican Party lose right across the board. And, you know, that's the outcome that they're trying to avoid by canceling the post office, basically, by killing off the post office. The Trump campaign itself has publicly allocated $20 million to pay for lawyers and law firms to sue states to block expansion of mail-in voting. Republican lawmakers are doing the best they can to help out. In Ohio, for example, their Secretary of State, Frank LaRose, announced that, yeah, here in Ohio, we will allow drop boxes. You know, so, you know, if you want to bring your mail-in ballot and drop it off, you don't have to worry about the post office. Cool, we got a drop box for you. But only one per county. Now, the entire city of Cleveland is in one county, millions and millions of people. And then you got a county out there, you know, a red county in Ohio with, what, 30,000 people in it? They get one drop box, Cleveland gets one drop box. How's that going to work out? I mean, this is fairly predictable. And then this morning, Bill Cassidy, the Republican senator, was on CNN going, well, you know, there is fraud. Back in North Carolina, there was this guy who was harvesting ballots. Yeah, he was a Republican. He got busted, and he's in prison. Or if he isn't, he's on his way or should be. I mean, but that doesn't mean that there's widespread voter fraud or election fraud that's associated with mail-in ballots. Actually, they're quite clean, they're quite reliable, they're quite safe. But we shouldn't even be having to make this argument. You've got the President of the United States trying to destroy the U.S. Postal Service. More than 1.2 billion prescriptions were sent through the Postal Service last year. And right now, virtually every veteran in America, the VA pretty much only mails prescriptions. Pretty much every veteran in America is getting their meds through the post office. And people will start dying when their medication comes late. Diabetics will go into diabetic shock. People on blood pressure medication will end up with heart attacks and strokes. Donald Trump doesn't care. The Republicans in the United States Senate don't care. Now might be a good time to call the United States Senate at 202-224-3121 and let them know what you think about this. But Donald Trump is actually enthusiastic about this. He's bragging that he's blocking money to the post office just so people can't vote by mail. Mark Meadows has been open. Everybody's been trying to figure out why, you know, Mark Meadows, the cokehead, former head of the so-called Freedom Caucus, that's spelled F-R-E-E-D-U-M-B, caucus in the House of Representatives, has been blocking this. You know, he's now Trump's chief of staff. He's been blocking this, and people are scratching their heads going, why doesn't Mark Meadows, why is Charles Koch and his billionaire buddies opposed to people getting unemployment benefits? Well, of course, because they're libertarians and they don't think government benefits should go to anybody for anything. But, you know, why specifically this? Why this big push? Well, because it's going to help mail-in voting. It's mind-boggling. So I wrote an op-ed, which is up at the top of Alternet right now. And it's also over on Ross Story and a few other places. And it's titled, If Biden Wins, Get Ready for Trump to Punish America. And I just want to run this one by you, too, and ask the question, you know, do you think Trump is going to get away with this? And am I missing something about what we can do about this? I mean, I'm saying call Republican senators at 202-224-3121. Tweet at Republican senators. I tweeted at Bill Cassidy this morning saying, you know, that was a pathetic performance on CNN. Am I missing something here? How do you think this is going to play out? And I've got a couple scenarios I'm going to share with you. The first is Trump punishes America if he loses. The second, which came from a couple of military people, is Trump basically ends democracy in America if he loses. These are both if he loses scenarios. I don't really have an if he wins scenario because I think it's fairly clear that he's not going to, unless he can steal the election. As I've said for years, Republicans can only win elections when they cheat. And, you know, the basic bottom line here is that, you know, African Americans and Hispanics have suffered from voter suppression for well over a century. And now with the post office, Trump is trying to do voter suppression to everybody, which is all those white people out there. And, you know, if you get enough white people pissed off, is that going to stop him? But anyhow, if Trump wins, he has tweeted multiple times that if he loses, the stock market will crash. Well, he's now set up that scenario. Jerome Powell, who is not an economist, he's a former managing director or partner at Carlyle Group, the big fund, private equity fund that funds defense contractors. That's one of the places where he made his tens of millions of dollars, the chairman of the Fed. And Trump brought him in, and he has now invented $7 trillion out of thin air. I mean, literally created it out of thin air and used it to buy stocks and bonds in major corporations to support the stock market. It's the only reason the stock market hasn't crashed. So what happens if Joe Biden is declared the winner, say on November 20th? Say it takes a couple of weeks to count the ballots because of the mail-in ballots and everything else. And on November 20th, the states all certify, yep, Joe Biden won. Jerome Powell says, okay, we're out of here. We're not going to support the stock market anymore. And boom, the market collapses. All the talking heads come out in very serious voices and say, well, the market has its own intelligence. It knew that a Democrat would raise taxes and it's going to crash the economy. So there you go. And the stock market goes down to 7,000. And Joe Biden is now inheriting a worse economy than Barack Obama inherited when George W. Bush crashed the economy in 2008. And frankly, I think it'll be a worse economy than when Republican President Herbert Hoover crashed the economy in 1930. How do you think this is going to play out?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And in a few minutes, I'll share with you this open letter to General Mark Milley, which is worth being concerned about. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman. On this week's Science Revolution, is a drug maker sitting on a possible COVID-19 cure just due to greed? Dr. Stephen Anstrop, chief scientist for Polar Bears International, is here. Could polar bears be lost by 2100? Food and Water Watch's Tony Corbo dissects Cory Booker's bill to protect meatpackers and why it's important. In Geeky Science, we'll talk about why the coronavirus vaccine may not work well for obese people. Now, that's a big problem. And lastly, Michelle Obama speaks about anxiety during the pandemic and what we can all do. Tune into the Science Revolution wherever fine podcasts are available. Hi, Tom Hartman here. My new book is out, The Hidden History of Monopolies, How Big Business Destroyed the American Dream. American monopolies dominate, control, and consume most of the energy of our entire economic system. They function the same as cancer does in a body. And like cancer, they weaken our systems while threatening to crash the entire body economic. American monopolies have also seized massive political power and use it to maintain their obscene profits and CEO salaries while crushing small competitors. In the foreword by Ralph Nader, he says, quote, "This is the most important dynamic book on the cancers of monopoly by giant corporations written in our generation," end quote. It's the fourth in my Hidden History series, available where all fine books are sold. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Democracy starts with you. Tag, you're it. Tony in Shirley, New York. Hey, Tony, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I believe about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I had called in and we had spoken regarding the Postmaster General and the potential for rigging the election. And now, obviously, this has taken on much national clout than the last time you and I had spoken. But that being said, I was curious as to whether or not maybe some of the attorney generals in a majority of the states could possibly get together and file a lawsuit against the Trump administration, hopefully getting it to a higher level of maybe to the Supreme Court in time, letting them know that they're violating Article 1 of the Constitution by what they're imposing on the post office and possibly salvaging this election prior to the mail-in voting.
Because Article 1 gives Congress the authority to fund the post office, you mean?
Correct.
Yeah, that would be Article 1, Section 8. Yeah, the problem is, and this is the problem at this point in time, I mean, we are, you know, fewer than 3 months out from the election, really fewer than a month and a half out, less than a month and a half out from the beginning of mail-in voting, you know?
So and, we should have been a little bit more proactive on this, I guess.
Well, we should have seen it coming. We should have realized that this guy, you know, Donald Trump and the Republican Party will do whatever it takes to stay in power, period, full stop, including massive cheating, including destroying institution, government, you know, federal institutions that literally date back to Benjamin Franklin. This is a naked power grab. This is an attempt to turn America into a tin pot dictatorship, period, full stop. This is Donald Trump using the instrument of government to assure his own continued hold on power. That's what Lukashenko, or whatever his name is, did in Belarus.
In Belarus,
you know,
yeah.
Lukashenko? Yeah. I mean, and they're in the streets literally today.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that, and it's sad what's been going on there for many years, but I guess on a different note, I'm just curious as to why, during his tenure, Obama-Biden, when they had Congress, when they had the Senate and Congress, did not try to overturn that 2006 law, which basically forced the Postal Service into bankruptcy.
Yeah. You know, there were a lot of things that it would have been nice if Obama had gotten around to. The fact of the matter is he only had 72 working days where he had a filibuster-proof Senate, and then Mitch McConnell blocked everything going forward after that. So it's hard to blame Obama for this, frankly.
I'm not trying to blame him. I'm just curious. I am not trying to blame him. Not by a long shot. Yeah. I mean, I thought he was one of the most eloquent presidents, and I ideally miss him, you know, and it's good to hear his voice again. But it would have been nice to have seen at least some kind of a valiant attempt on their part to try to reverse the course that this was put on.
Because I don't think anybody could have predicted 10 years ago or 6 years ago or whatever, more like 10 years ago, I guess now, that Donald Trump would try to take down the post office. I mean, it's just absolutely mind-boggling. Yeah, the Republicans never should have been allowed to get away with this in the first place, but I totally get what you're saying. Tony, thank you. Thanks for the call, and thanks for the comments and the conversation. Stick around. I got to share this open letter to General Milley when we come right back. You can help America return to democracy by telling friends and family how to listen to this and other great progressive programs. Tag, you're it. So this is a letter, this was published over at DefenseOne.com, you know, a kind of military defense-based website. It's by John Nagel and Paul Yingling. John Nagel is a retired Army officer and veteran of both Iraq wars, head of the school at the Haverford School outside Pennsylvania. And Paul Yingling is a retired U.S. Army lieutenant colonel, served 3 tours in Iraq, another in Bosnia, and a 5th in Operation Desert Storm. They wrote this letter over at DefenseOne.com to General Milley, who is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And they start out by reminding him of his oath to, you know, support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And they write, I'm just going to quote from pieces of this letter. If Donald Trump refuses to leave office at the expiration of his constitutional term, the United States military must remove him by force, and you must give that order. Due to a dangerous confluence of circumstances, the once unthinkable scenario of authoritarian rule in the United States is now a very real possibility. First, as Mr. Trump faces near certain electoral defeat, he is vigorously undermining public confidence in our elections. Second, Mr. Trump's defeat would result in his facing not merely political ignominy, but also criminal charges. Third, Mr. Trump is assembling a private army capable of thwarting not only the will of the electorate, but also the capacities of ordinary law enforcement. When these forces collide on January 20th, 2021, the U.S. military will be the only institution capable of upholding our constitutional order. Basically, what they're saying is they're anticipating Trump loses, and then noon on January 20th is the day that the Constitution and the law say that the White House is handed over to Joe Biden. So continuing with their letter. The stakes of the 2020 election are especially high for Mr. Trump. In defeat, he will likely face criminal prosecution. And then they go through, you know, the Manhattan District Attorney, Deutsche Bank. He pressured the ambassador to Great Britain to move the British Open. Many examples that could lead to federal charges. And then they go on to say, Mr. Trump is following the playbook of dictators throughout history. He is building a private army answerable only to him. When Caesar faced the prospect of a trial in Rome, he didn't return to face his day in court. He unleashed an army personally loyal to him alone on the Roman government. No student of history, Mr. Trump nevertheless appears to be following Caesar's example. The president's use of militarized Homeland Security agents against domestic political demonstrations constitutes the creation of a paramilitary force unaccountable to the public. The members of this private army, often lacking police insignia or other identification, exist not to enforce the law, but to intimidate the president's political opponents. These powerful cross currents, Mr. Trump's electoral defeat, his assault on the integrity of our elections, his impending criminal prosecution, and his creation of a private army will collide on January 20th. Senate Republicans, they write, already, this is a letter to the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Senate Republicans, already reduced to supplicant status, will remain silent and inert, as much to obscure their complicity as to retain their majority. This is why I'm saying call the Republicans in the United States Senate now and let them know what you think about this at 202-225-3121 or 224-3121. They both get to the same place. Senate Republicans will remain silent. Mr. Trump will dismiss the Biden win as fake news. The courts will take months working through the docket, producing reasoned rulings that Trump will alternately appeal and ignore. Then the clock will strike at 1 minute after noon, January 20th, 2001, and Donald Trump will be sitting in the Oval Office. The street protests will inevitably swell outside the White House, and the ranks of Trump's private army will grow inside its grounds. The Speaker of the House will declare the Trump presidency at an end and direct the Secret Service and federal marshals to remove Trump from the premises. These agents will realize that they are outmanned and outgunned by Trump's private army, and the moment of decision will arrive. At this moment of constitutional crisis, only two options remain. Under the first, U.S. military forces escort the former president from the White House grounds. Trump's little green men, so intimidated to lightly armed federal law enforcement agents, step aside and fade away. Under the second, the U.S. military remains inert while the Constitution dies. As the senior military officer of the United States, the choice between these two options lies with you. Should you remain silent, you will be complicit in a coup d'etat. And then they remind Mark Milley of his oath. I, Mark Milley, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bring true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely. You know, and they go through this whole thing. So help me God. And they close it by saying, the fate of our republic may well depend on your adherence to this oath. Will Mark Milley keep his oath? Will Donald Trump leave office? Will his attack on the post office succeed? Will we be able to shame the Republic? I guess the biggest question here, since really the power in the Senate lies with Mitch McConnell and the Republicans, and they're the ones who are enabling Trump to do this, can they be shamed? Can they be influenced?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And if you call the Senate, call in and tell us what happened when you called at 202-224-3121, the number for the Senate switchboard. So we need to be thinking right now about how to Trump-proof the presidency in the future. I mean, Donald Trump is causing all kinds of chaos and disasters, and things are, frankly, I think, going to get much worse before they get better. And I don't think they're going to get better until after January 21st or noon on January 20th. And that's assuming that absolute craziness doesn't happen. But there's a bunch of steps that we need to take, from recalibrating or fixing how we do our elections, to fixing how we handle money in politics, to fixing the pardon power of the presidency, to specifically saying that if a president is found to be a criminal, he or she can still be held to account. I mean, just straightforward stuff. And we need to be getting ready to do this. I lay it all out in a new video that you can find over at TomHartmann.com. Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And for our geeky science today, this is an amazing story. The body has a molecule. It's called TMAO, trimethylamine N-oxide. And TMAO is a marker that things are going on inside your body that can lead to heart disease, if not being the thing itself. I don't understand all the details of exactly how TMAO works in this regard, but there was a fascinating article published, a study published in the August 11th issue of the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And they were looking at TMAO levels as well as blood cholesterol, blood pressure, and weight. And they were trying to figure out, you know, what dietary factor will have a big influence on these things. Because TMAO means, you know, higher TMAO levels, greater risk of a heart attack. And then, of course, blood cholesterol, blood pressure, and weight. We all know all the things that those are associated with. And so this was a 16-week study where they compared, they had people two meals a day eat either red meat or vegetarian meat, you know, Beyond Meat or Impossible Burgers, basically, you know, these plant-based meat products. And each group did it. Half the group for 8 weeks would eat vegetarian burgers and the other half would eat the meat burgers, and then vice versa for the second 8 weeks, and they compared them. Two servings of meat or plant-based alternatives every single day for 16 weeks. And what they found, and I'm quoting from this, people with elevated TMAO have a 60% higher risk for adverse cardiovascular attacks, such as heart attacks. And this from the study, researchers observed that participants who ate the red meat diet during the first 8 week phase had an increase in TMAO, while those who ate the plant-based diet did not. They go on to say, health benefits conveyed from plant-based alternatives extended to weight and levels of LDL cholesterol, the bad cholesterol. Participants' level of LDL cholesterol, these are the people who were eating the vegan meat, you know, the vegetarian meat. Participants' levels of LDL cholesterol dropped on average 10 milligrams per deciliter. That's, you know, the score that they give you. Oh, your cholesterol is, you know, 122. Well, it dropped by 10 points, basically, which is not only statistically significant, but clinically significant, too, right? A measurable reduction in heart disease from cholesterol. In addition, participants lost 2 pounds on average during the plant-based portion of the diet. And they're still eating everything they want, as much as they want. They just basically went vegan. It's amazing. So, anyhow, our story for the day. Let's pick up some of your phone calls. Cheryl in Milwaukee, Oregon. Hey, Cheryl, what's up?
Oh, boy. Well, I believe that Trump is already setting up this country to take it over. And one of those things is he is billeting his special, what I call them, are special troops in federal buildings, in towns.
Yeah, the federal troops here in Portland have not yet left.
That's right. And he could sneak more in and more in and more in until he's building the whole company.
Yeah.
We were the first demonstration, but he has said he's doing them in other places. He's done them in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You set them up, and then on the day you specify, you just simply take over the country. Yep. And put them in every city that you think is going to be a problem for you.
Yep. I think that's entirely possible, Cheryl.
I think we're unwise to keep saying if Trump does. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is, he's doing it now, and we need to get us on the ball to counter whatever it is that he's putting up.
Yeah, I am with you. George in Palm Desert, California. Hey, George, what's on your mind today?
Okay, I got a little bit of good news, I think, because I, too, wring my hands over this traitor trying to stay in the White House. But I don't know if you saw Bill Maher last week, and he interviewed Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who served on the Joint Chiefs of Staff with Colin Powell.
But, yeah, Wilkerson's been on this program many times.
Oh, okay. Well, he did say Friday night that if Trump called out his paramilitary goon squads or anything like that, he said that the Army will be dispatched and will take care of the situation, albeit with a lot of bloodshed. But as far as I'm concerned, that would be a great day to get all those guys to, you know, surround the White House, try to take it over, and then have them take on the U.S. military.
Yeah, anything that involves bloodshed in my world is not a good day. But I get what Wilkerson is saying, and I think that it's probably true. I'm just concerned that it's not going to reach that point. There's two scenarios to be concerned about. One is Trump steals the election, or Trump claims that he won the election, and he's got, you know, and the Republican Party goes along with it, even though he didn't win the election. I mean, this is what happened in 2000 when the Brooks Brothers riot happened down in Florida. You had Tom DeLay sending his staffers down there along with Brett Kavanaugh and John Roberts, and they were protesting, saying, you know, stop the count, stop the count. George Bush is president, when Al Gore actually won Florida, as we later learned. And that's my concern. Yeah, is that, you know, I mean, the Republican Party's already stolen one election. They did it in 2000 by, you know, using propaganda and lies. NBC had called the election for Al Gore, you know, and then George W. Bush's cousin on Fox News said, oh, no, we think George Bush won. And that was when it all went to hell. George, thanks for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, we have a new video up over at TomHartman.com. It's astonishing. Just think about this. This year alone, with this one source of revenue, according to Senator Bernie Sanders, quote, this year alone, we could fund tuition-free college for all, eliminate child hunger, ensure clean drinking water for every American household, build 500,000 affordable housing units, provide face masks for everybody, produce the protective gear and medical supplies our health workers need for the pandemic, and fully fund the U.S. Post Office. Now, what is this magical thing that we could do that would produce enough money to do all these things? Fund the Internal Revenue Service. Republicans have cut its funding so badly since 2010 that fully a third of their enforcement is no longer happening. And tax cheats have walked off. They're basically refusing to pay over $260 billion in taxes this year. You can hear the whole thing over at TomHartman.com. Sandra in Bennington, Nebraska. Hey, Sandra, what's up?
Hi, I just had a question. I was arguing with someone online the other day about the Trump $300, you know, extra for unemployment, and supposedly right. $100 from the states if they could pay it. She was saying that that's on top of what the states already pay in unemployment. But
that's correct.
I wondered about that because an awful lot of people, they've already been on unemployment. They've used up what they were going to get, and so they have none of that anymore.
That's correct.
So,
if your unemployment benefits have expired, and during the Bush administration, they cut long-term unemployment from 2 years down to 1 year, and I think they gave states the ability to cut it even more, because I know that some states, it's only 6 months. So if your unemployment benefits have expired, you don't get anything. And if you are drawing unemployment, you would get the extra $300 out of the FEMA funds plus the $100 coming from your state if your state chooses to participate. And by the way, it'll probably take most states 2 or 3 months to be able to process this money, because instead of taking money out of the Treasury and doing it the normal way, they're taking money out of FEMA. And it's a whole brand new thing that they're going to have to reprogram their computers and everything. I can't see any state doing it. Nobody's going to see any money in their paychecks. And I think over the next few weeks, as people notice that their paychecks are still, you know, half of what they were or less in some cases, because that $600 a week has gone away, people are going to figure out that Donald Trump has been lying to them, that he's just running another con, you know, which is what he's what he does for a living. This guy has been a con artist since he was a kid.
Yeah, that's
Sandra,
sure.
Thank you for the call. You know, always good to fact check. Thank you very much. Jordan in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Jordan, what's up?
Awesome. I want to speak for the black delegation. We are not voting for Kanye West. And my question for you arose when Benedict Donald appointed DeJoy at the USPS. If he is only appointing people that financially support him, what is the difference between us and Russia?
Well, increasingly, that difference is getting smaller and smaller. And it's not just Russia. It's us and any authoritarian power. If you really want to see the formula, Google my name and Viktor Orban. And or just the word Hungary should pop it up. I wrote a piece for Salon a while back. In fact, I retweeted it yesterday, a couple of months ago, about the parallels. How authoritarian governments. Orban in 9 years took Hungary from being one of the most vibrant democracies in the European Union and a full member of NATO, from that into being a failed state, a one-man, strongman dictatorship, essentially. And that's what Trump is doing. Jordan, did you say you're African American?
Correct. Yes.
Do you think that any consequential fragment of the African American community is going to vote for Kanye West over Joe Biden?
As typical, what Trump does hurts Trump, and he'll steal Republican voters. Those are Kanye supporters. That's what people don't understand.
Okay. So it's going to backfire on him. Fascinating. Thank you, Jordan. Great to hear from you. Bill in St. Helens, Oregon. Bill, you got the last minute and a half. What's up?
Yeah. Hi, Tom. You know, there's nothing more sacred in this country than the vote, because it's literally the only way we can hold our elected officials accountable. And one party, as you mentioned a few moments ago, one party has actively suppressed the vote for over two decades now. Now, I follow Greg Palast.
Four decades.
Religious. Yeah, well, I'm just saying that I'm saying since 2000, it was so overt, it was undeniable. Yep. 2000 was a wholesale theft of the presidency by the Republicans. But that's not my point. My point is, I hear people giving lip service to us. I've written my representatives. I said, why aren't you doing anything? This is a crime against representative democracy. There's no greater crime going on in this country right now than this absolute, you know, this absolute attempt to overthrow the will of the people in every single election. And that's essentially what they're doing. And yet, CBS, ABC, NBC, MSNBC, lip service. I hear people talking about it in passing, and then we put someone like Brian Kemp in a governorship after clearly stealing an election. The man should be in prison, not in the governor's office. I don't understand what's going on in this country, Tom, that we can't talk about the crimes going on against our elections. I'm mind-boggled. I'm speechless.
Yeah, I am too, Bill. I am too, and I think that the Democrats need to be screaming a lot louder. And of course, every time they do, the Republicans come out and say, oh, they just want illegal immigrants to vote or some other BS like that. Bill, thank you for the call. It is outrageous. Thanks so much for being with us today. Remember, there is a lot you can do. And we've talked about a lot of it during this program. We can be active, even if we're housebound. You know, so get out there, get active, tag your it. Help make something happen. And try to lift somebody up today. You know, find somebody that you can just, like, make them smile, okay? Or yourself. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great afternoon. Be good to yourself and others.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.